Oh, we may have already been recording. Anyway, hello, this is John Tortorisi, and we are here in the home of Professor Biruti Chiplascaite. It is February 6th, 2013, and this is the second part of a two-part interview that we are conducting for the Oral History Project at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And we're following up on some questions that we touched on in the first part of the interview, but we'd like to cover in a little more depth. Biruti, you have worked over the years with some very significant Spanish poets and writers. I recall that you've had an extensive correspondence, for example, with the poet, is it Maria Atencia? What is her first name?
Maria Victoria Atencia. Maria Victoria Atencia.
Maria Victoria Atencia. Mm-hmm. And we spoke briefly about the changes in Spanish politics and culture from the Francoist era to the post-78 changes in Spain, and how that affected the culture, and in particular, women in literature. So when did you first learn about Atencia's poetry and then develop a relationship, a correspondence with her?
You know, it would be difficult for me to say. I somehow don't remember the first contact or whatever, because I first met her when I had already been working on her. But I must have read her poetry in, I imagine, a periodical or anything, or somebody must have sent me some. And right away I noticed that that was such a great figure and such original figure. And I started then looking. She hadn't published really that much. But I would say that practically every poem of hers is worth more than a book of others.
That's high praise. So would this have been in the 70s or 80s that you do recall whether she was active in the Francoist period, or was it after the changes that she came?
I would say that she wrote already in Franco, okay. Spain. She wasn't known for a long time. Mm-hmm. But you see, her husband was also a poet, but her husband also was very much connected with the press. So I think through these connections, she could publish more.
I see. Okay.
And then also, of course, if somebody would invite her husband, he would say, well, invite also my wife, who is another poet, very different. Mm-hmm. But this is only my guess. So that she was recognized as a good poet, but to really come to fame, I would say, it was only in the 90s, probably. It took a long time.
Okay.
And of course, living in Malaga, you see, living not in Madrid, quite away from that, that also influences.
Yes. So what is it about her poetry that had such an impact on you?
No empty words. One poem, as I wrote her in one of the last letters, and just a few days ago I had a letter from her commenting it. She says, you say that I in one poem say more than some poets in the whole book. And I really confirm it. It's condensed, but it's, I mean, it's a marvelous combination. It's not only thought, and it's certainly not technique. It's just that each word sits in the right place and just goes right to your heart, not unnecessarily to your mind. It also combines very well the heart and the mind. Mine. You know, mm-hmm. everybody has a different reaction. Mm-hmm. But I think that her poetry is just quite extraordinary. And by now she has been recognized. She has had several prizes and all that.
Would you say that you had anything to do with raising her profile in Spain? Did you write on her for Spanish journals and periodicals?
I wrote on her, not only Spanish journals, but I mean, I think or talked about her. I think that also important in different symposia, mm-hmm. in different countries. And well, at least she says, but I realize that is of course exaggeration. She says that without me, she probably would still not be known.
Hmm. Very good. Is your appreciation for Atencia within a grouping of other women poets of this period who are her equal, or form a school, or form a kind of new appreciation for women's literature in Spain, or is it more just the individual
appreciation? No, I would not say that really
didn't
quite exist. I have contact with several women poets, good poets, and interestingly, most of them are from Andalusia, from the south. Mm-hmm. But they do not form any circle. Officially, they don't act as a group of women poets, but they are just good poets.
Mm-hmm.
So that I don't know whether it's coincidence or whether, I don't read everything. Somehow, I think that when I started writing about Atencia, more people in the South realized that probably it's worthwhile that I know something about them. So they started sending me books. And that is how I got to know them. I would say that is the factor about Andalusian poets. Because there are poets also in Madrid. Women poets probably not so. Mm. And I don't know everything, you know. But I would say it's coincidence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the reason I ask is because I know that you've had extensive correspondence with Atencia over the years and with other poets and
writers. Yes, I still have. I still have. And they still send me every new book. Yes.
And I know you've written on women in literature in a comparative method.
Yes, and I think that was important because for a long time in Spain, just nobody wrote about women that much. They were always second rate somehow, mm-hmm. which is not true. There are also good novelists.
Mm-hmm.
So it was important to bring them to attention.
And this really has changed really recently. It's not a long-term phenomenon that they've come more to the attention of the public as a group, not a group, but as
category.
A category.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say probably already about 20 years. Little
20
by
years.
Little.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I recall a talk you gave about women's literature,
mm-hmm.
for lack of a better term, and you made comparisons between the U.S., England,
yes.
France, mm-hmm. Spain,
mm-hmm.
and focused on some writers in each country.
Mm-hmm.
And Would you say that there are characteristics or trajectories in these literatures, in these women's lives, that connect their work in any way? Is it more really culturally determined and really a matter of the artist? Or are there connections between...
No, I don't think I could make that affirmation. I simply think that they have been ignored in those countries. And each is very different.
So it's the kind of neglect that gives them a certain similarity.
I would say so. And not, you know, they are not belligerent. There are those... There are plenty of women in the last 20 years in all these countries who write to fight that, well, the women have to be recognized, but they not necessarily write anything good.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
interesting. So I don't believe in trying to push through a theory.
Mm-hmm.
No, they write because they're good writers. And that is why their books are different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this brings up then your collection of materials in the Department of Special Collections at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Libraries, which includes extensive correspondence with Spanish poets and writers and others, and also a manuscript of a book that you prepared on the poet and writer Jorge Guillén.
Well, that's not a book on him. That is his correspondence with his first wife.
I see. Okay.
Who was French. And nothing ever had been done about it. Not many people even knew about it. And then I spoke one day with her daughter and said, well, you know, that should be published. And so I got the manuscript and I worked, as I told you, 8 years on it because it was not easy. France, you know, during 8 year period, to get all the references or anything, because I only had the letters without any annotations.
The letters from Guillén to his Guillén, first wife, and her letters to
her
him.
Her letters to him.
Okay, you had both.
Yes.
Okay.
And that showed really how he developed very much.
So as a writer.
Yeah, it was a fascinating correspondence, really.
And you translated all of these letters?
I don't remember now. I don't think I translated. I think I only transcribed them. I only transcribed them and annotated them. But I don't think I, you know, this has been now several years ago.
Was the correspondence in French then? Or
the correspondence was in French at the beginning, only in French.
Okay.
And then at a certain point he started writing to her more also in Spanish. She had learned Spanish.
Okay. And did you write an introduction, or you said you annotated the letters?
I annotated the letters. No, a full introduction I did not get to write because I did not know who would be publishing it and how it would happen. And then it turned out that his son wanted to have it all published as his edition. And I said, no, my work.
Mm-hmm.
And so nothing happened of it, and he kind of coaxed his new wife into doing it again. So she transcribed it again.
Really? Well,
and it came out as a book.
In Spain?
In Spain.
In Spanish?
In Spanish.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, and wow. I still think that some of my notes were more ample.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you've seen this book?
Yes, mm-hmm. I do have the book.
You do have mm-hmm. the book. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I thought it was such a loss of time.
I suppose you could, if you want to take another project on, you could translate it all into English and publish it.
But no.
That's just easy. Well, that's really
that was the greatest disappointment of my life.
Yes, I can imagine.
8 years.
8 years of work on a project and then having mm-hmm. the rug pulled out. That's mm-hmm. extraordinary. And but the manuscript is in special collections.
It is in special collections.
For those scholars who would like to consult it.
Yes, somebody writing on Guillen, for instance, I think might have interest in seeing what I did with the mm-hmm. one with the whole collection, and then what the other person did,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
and find probably things she had. Of course, she had the son, so the son gave her all the information about the family and such, which I didn't have. Mm-hmm. I wrote to the daughter every time when I found something, but the daughter didn't know everything either. The mm-hmm. son is a literary critic, you know, was he died.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I somehow subconsciously I
have put an end to this,
put
and
an end
yeah,
to it.
Well, that's a cautionary tale, I guess, but also a great disappointment. And but the collection, your collection at Special Collections, is certainly something that any scholar of modern Spanish literature should consult. And I assume the collection also will have other materials, books, etc. So,
yeah, but I think it's mainly the correspondence that's so important,
yes,
because that, of
yes.
course, is unique.
Yes.
And there are quite a few poets who have written me, and all the letters go there.
That's great. Tell me a little bit about the work that you did on the René Long collection, which is also in Special mm-hmm. Collections. Maybe say a few words about who René Long was and what her importance is as a
Well, she was a
scholar.
Professor of French literature who was, I think, even a few years in Madison, but then she was in Milwaukee.
At Marquette.
Marquette. Mm-hmm. And she had great correspondence with many French authors and scholars working on those authors. So that correspondence is fascinating. It's so full of material, of real facts. And it was also interesting because in the last few years, then there is more correspondence with her ex-students.
Mm-hmm.
To see how grateful the students were for her to having put them in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very, I learned very, very much mm-hmm. working on that. Because, of course, I don't know French literature and the whole situation that well.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think it's a very important collection.
And in particular, if I recall, you worked on the Natalie Barney manuscript.
Yes.
Because she had written a book on Barney that was never published.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I gather they had a falling out, Barney and
yes.
René Long,
mm-hmm.
which I think is also an important...
Oh, it is important because, of course, then it you know, branches out and touches other person, mm-hmm. which at that time weren't known at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So...
No, our special collections have materials that are just... Precious.
Quite unique.
Yes.
And very much a part of the history of the university, certainly.
To show.
Yeah.
I think it shows why our university produced some good scholars. Because
yes.
when you have such scholars teaching, mm-hmm. they leave marks.
Indeed. They leave not only a legacy, but they leave a rich collection of materials in this small Midwestern town.
But especially they have formed students
Yes.
To see how one approaches literature. That's very important.
Well, that brings up your students. And I know you've had some students that you really appreciated and have followed their careers. And that recently you were at a symposium where you received many gratifying responses to your influence on people's work who have gone on to quite distinguished careers in literary studies, in particular in Spanish literature. Can you tell me something about some of your students, or maybe as a group, or this kind of satisfaction?
You know, my experience is that every student has so much hidden power in him or her. You just have to awaken them. And that, in a way, became clear to me when at the end of the semester, you know, you always, the department, at least the Spanish department, asks that the student must write an evaluation of the course. And there were so many who said, she was impossible. It was so hard. I've never had such an experience. But she showed me what I can do. And
that's a great gift.
That, to me, mm-hmm. was the best they could say. And that is what mm-hmm. these student, ex-students whom I met in the symposium said also. They said that they just didn't know many things, and they didn't know how to go about to bring anything out, and then after my class, they knew.
And they found out what they were capable
exactly.
of.
Exactly, exactly.
Instead of having a kind of minimal or mm-hmm. median in the class,
right.
you focused more on that challenging environment that would spark some
yes.
people to
yes.
to great
to,
achievement.
To mm-hmm. show them to search for more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't find, you don't always find what you are looking for, mm-hmm. but you learn techniques to do it, and they do. No, and I have had wonderful, I mean, one of my students, I still am in contact with him. He's now chair of University of Pennsylvania, Spanish department. He has written such extraordinary books. Just wonderful.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's
I'm so proud having had so many good students.
Well, it makes the teaching profession
absolutely
worthwhile
because
yes.
I did put in time,
mm-hmm.
you know, preparing the classes and seeing how everything goes and so. Mm. But then when you get such results, it was worthwhile. Mm.
And I would imagine that even those students that were more average got a great deal out of the class simply because of the challenge. And, the,
and
you know,
because
and,
they had some very good students next
yes.
to them, so
mm-hmm.
they couldn't show that they weren't worth anything.
Yes.
They had to
yeah.
do more.
Yeah.
No, there are always, I mean, in every class, there was always one or two that were extraordinary, very good.
And really, this is the way that you were taught and the way you learned, and it was the way, for example, George Mossy
mm.
learned.
Mm.
And it is from a different time now. It's teaching
right.
is much different now. But still, those students who really have the motivation and the spark do seem to prosper and
yes,
do well.
Yes, because
so.
I think it is unnecessary to just repeat what the professor says.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
No, they have to add or even show the professor that there is more in it than the professor says.
And this is what the great advantages of teaching is that
yes.
you actually learn from your students.
Oh, absolutely.
I imagine, right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
No, and the joy that you, mm-hmm. you get to see how well they can read, and to read poetry is more difficult than to read prose.
In what way?
Because it's much more condensed.
Mm-hmm.
And that there is much more that's not said, that you just, that's implied, that you only, you have to get it out.
You have to think. It's not satisfaction literature.
I would say it's a very good combination in the very good poetry. What I consider the extraordinary poetry is a combination between, it makes you think, but through feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You feel that there is something, and then you see, try to see why. And so it combines really more depth than just feeling.
Mm-hmm. And it's an immersion.
Oh, yes. Oh, totally.
In a way that sometimes...
Totally. When I worked on books on authors, I had so many nights dreaming all the night, having conversations with Guillen, for instance, in my dreams.
Hmm.
Very much.
Would the dreams, if you remember, be about a specific poem, or would it be a kind of what did the poet mean?
Yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's very enriching. That's great.
It's fascinating.
Great way to spend your life.
Yeah. Oh, really?
In a very positive way.
Don't regret anything.
That's great.
That's wonderful.
That's very nice. Well, I have a few more questions for you. One is, I know you've won some significant awards, and can you tell us a little bit about the, honors that you've received? I think it's important that be mentioned.
Well, I think the greatest honor, which really came totally unexpectedly, and that was only a few years ago, was the big medal from the King of Spain.
Oh. And what is that called? Is it the...
It is called... I think it is Alfonso el Sabio.
Okay.
Of one of the Spanish figures.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, very nice. Well, I bet that was appreciated by you.
That, as I say, took me totally by surprise, because I didn't know that anybody has proposed my name or anything, and nobody... I still don't know how it came to be.
Were you able to go to the award ceremony in Spain? Or?
No, that was the big disappointment. It was sent to me by mail.
Oh.
I thought that was a devaluation. Really.
Yes. Well, you can still dream about...
But I still have the medal. It's nice.
That's very good. I know you've been a fellow at various institutes around the world, etc. I don't suppose we need to go into all of that. Mm-hmm. We've talked at length about the Humanities Institute here in Madison. I know you were in Germany. You've been in many other countries.
In Lithuania. And there I also got one of big rewards and honors.
Uh-huh. Well, tell me a little bit about, we spoke about it briefly earlier, but about your take on post-Stalinist Lithuania, on the literature there, on the culture, on the vibrancy of the media. I mean, they are producing great singers, I know, in the former Baltic states. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is something that... is quite extraordinary for such small countries to produce great singers and musicians.
We always had.
That's great.
You know, not many, but really outstanding. Outstanding. Mm-hmm. No, because for a singer, I think there is no such oppression like communism. I mean, a singer sings. Mm-hmm. And if he sings an opera that's already existing, you won't stuff in communism.
Mm-hmm.
So they were more free. In a way. They were not that restricted. And otherwise in Lithuania, I think now, for instance, I try to follow a little bit what is happening in literature. I am not totally happy. I think that the books always astound me by the use of language. What they do with language is just incredible. Some manipulate the language beautifully. I mean, such richness. But the story itself is usually...
Banal.
Banal.
Okay.
Yeah, very often.
Hmm. Perhaps that will come.
That probably they need more time, and they need. I think they were so closed away from everything. Now I think they should be reading more world literature, and they should realize how much one can do. But as I say, lately, the books that I have been getting, it's not easy to get the books. I don't want to buy every title that comes out not knowing at all what it is. So or our library doesn't get much. But what I've seen is just that they haven't developed the psychological maybe side so much. But the language is just so enriching.
It's very encouraging.
It's so enriching. Yes.
For a small country.
It is. And for you know, maybe my reaction is personal because I realize that after that many years away, my language is getting poor, or at least it's not getting richer. And when I see what they do, that's just a treasure.
That's great. Mm. Well, do you still have family back in Lithuania? I mean, I know you have endowed a scholarship there.
Yes, I still do, and the students still go. I have one fellowship every summer for Spain for a student, and then another, which can be distributed how they find. I think that this university has opened up, and there have been a few Lithuanian professors who live in the States, for instance, who have gone to teach there, one in political science, one in literature. And I think they have open horizons. They have really showed people there what can be done. So that was very, very important.
So I understand that from restitution of family property, you have set up a fund to honor your father, who was a gynecologist, I believe, at a hospital there.
Yes, and he had founded a school for gynecological nurses, which still is functioning.
Oh, that's
so kind of I have several years ago, I founded an award, annual award, for the best student. And on the other hand, thinking more of myself, I've founded another scholarship at the Conservatory of Music for the best pianist. No, not necessarily pianist. They have some kind of a annual event where they have a competition. But it is mainly pianists.
Do they send you recordings? They should. Of this,
No, I told them not to send me. They send me just information about those.
Oh, very nice.
So, no, they really, I think they do it very conscientiously.
And I know you've done some translating work from Spanish into Lithuanian and Lithuanian into Spanish. Is that correct?
Some, not much really, but
well,
I have.
That's a contribution.
Yes, yes.
And are there ongoing restitution issues still that your family is working on, or is it...
No. That is something
very
that,
complex.
Complex, but also that is where you see best the results of the Russian occupation, the corruption. Because they have kind of restituted and not restituted, and then the latest now was there was still one piece of land which had been taken by the government, and so in just in the last half year I have correspondence that they have decided now to compensate, you know, just like Georgia had. And suddenly the amount which had been established shrunk 10 times. And then when I told them that they should send it directly to that fellowship, to the School of Gynecology, it shrank again. And I still haven't received a word from the director of that school. So maybe somebody just...
It may shrink into nothing if I'm
almost sure. The corruption there is absolutely incredible.
It's
very sad because now I know that I will not try to to do anything more. I will not try to establish anything more. And even if even when you send a check, it usually gets stolen in the post office.
My goodness, isn't that? Well, that's a level of corruption that is endemic around the world, of course, especially in countries that are recreating themselves. No. And you get a few people in powerful position and they suck up all of the resources.
Just, it's really impossible. I've tried, you know, different ways, but there's no way you can get through. So what can I do? I cannot.
Well, and, you know, Russia more and more seems very corrupt, so its influence around in that part of the world has been pernicious in that sense.
No, I have kind of given up hope.
Well, that's too bad. Okay, so, well, perhaps we should just talk briefly about your trips to Puerto Rico for the music, for the Casals Festival, I believe.
No, actually, I did not go specially for the Casals Festival. The first time I went to Puerto Rico was to go to visit friends. I had very, very good friends, two very good German painters who had left Nazi Germany also, and they went through different places. They lived then in New York for a long time. I met them on a trip aboard ship. I was going to Spain, they were going to Italy. And right away, we somehow clicked. So then they bought a property in Puerto Rico also. And they used to go and spend part of the winter in Puerto Rico. And they said, well, why don't you come and visit us there? And I went, and they were very, very good friends of Pablo Casals.
I see. Okay.
And that way, I know that was my first Christmas with Pablo Casals. And we always went to visit Pablo Casals and listen to their house concerts. I mean, there was Horshovsky, Sasha Schneider, and Casals playing at home.
That must have been
It was absolutely extraordinary.
Really?
And these painter friends were also, they had such culture. And so unpretentious.
And do you have some of their paintings? I think.
Well, this portrait of mine there is his. This is his.
Yes, we're looking at two paintings in Berruti's living room, and they're both very good paintings.
Oh, he was excellent. Mm-hmm. She wasn't quite as good, maybe, but also. And, of course, I must mention, since we talk about Puerto Rico, I also had there a literary connection. They were very good friends of a great literary figure in Puerto Rico, Nelita Ventos Gaston.
I see.
So that we met there, and then Nelita asked me, she was the editor of an important periodical. So she asked me to write articles for her, and so until her death, we were very much in contact, and she was quite a personality.
So you would go on your vacations from the university to Puerto Rico?
I always went after Christmas for a week.
I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you also then started going to the Casals Festival, and if I recall, you had a correspondence with Casals, but unfortunately you've thrown that away.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
So what was the correspondence about? Was it about music? Was it about literature?
No, there was not much correspondence, really.
Okay.
No, I wouldn't say that would have been an important document.
Okay. No. Right, so it wasn't a great
very
loss.
Casual.
Greetings and this kind of thing.
Yes.
And how are you?
Was more interesting with him to talk.
I could imagine. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you'd like to say about that time down there?
No, just that it was fascinating. Mm-hmm. It was so enriching. I was just so lucky.
Yes. Well, is there anything else we haven't covered that you'd like to talk about?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, if we decide to continue, we will. But otherwise, thank you so much. And we will talk again soon. Thank you so much, Birgit.
I think we can.